Welcome to the Deep Dive. You sent over some really fascinating material, particularly this book, Solvable Models in Quantum Mechanics. Quite a dense read.
It definitely is. But we're honing in on a really core concept from it today.
Right, this idea of point interactions.
Exactly. Think of them as, well, the ultimate simplification. We basically pretend that all the complex ways particles interact happen at just one single tiny point in space.
Okay, like infinitesimally small.
Precisely. And, you know, you might think, well, how useful is that? But it turns out these simple models capture some really fundamental stuff about how quantum systems actually behave.
It makes me think of that Galileo quote, you know, the one.
Yeah.
About the universe being written in the language of math.
Ah, yes. Triangles, circles, the geometric figures as the alphabet.
Exactly. And quantum mechanics definitely speaks that language. These point interactions seem like a perfect example of abstract math giving real physical insights.
Absolutely. And that's really our goal for this deep dive, to explore how these seemingly basic mathematical models, these point interactions, can actually be a springboard.
A springboard for understanding more complex stuff.
Yeah, through approximations. It's a really powerful approach.
Okay, so the book kicks off with this sort of intuitive expression, right? Minus delta plus lambda delta x, A plus O.
That's the heuristic starting point, yeah.
Yeah.
You've got the Laplacian, Borg J, which tells you about curvature or kinetic energy.
And Borg is like this
sort of like a strength knob, exactly. And the door, the Dirac delta, pinpoints the interaction right at x.
But you mentioned things get trickier. It's not always that simple.
Well, not in higher dimensions. In 2 and 3 dimensions, that strength knob, it actually needs something called renormalization.
Renormalization. Okay, what did that mean practically?
It means isn't just a straightforward number anymore. Its definition involves carefully handling infinities that pop up in the math. It's essential to keep things consistent. It hints that interactions at a point are fundamentally different, more subtle, in 2D and 3D.
So the math is telling us something deeper about space itself, almost.
In a way, yes. It suggests that truly localized interactions in 3D need this more sophisticated treatment. But things are a bit simpler in one dimension.
How so?
Well, mathematically, defining these delta interactions in 1D is more direct. And what's really neat is that the math allows for a whole family of possible point interactions.
Not just the standard delta one.
No, there's actually a 4-parameter family of ways to make the energy operator mathematically well-behaved, what we call self-adjoint extensions.
Mm-hmm.
This freedom opens the door to other types, like these delta prime or lone interactions.
Delta prime. What's different about those?
They involve a different kind of singularity at the interaction point related to the derivative of the wave function, not just its value. So more variety in 1D.
Okay, so even these idealized points have some hidden depth. The book then talks about approximating them, right? Using interactions that are more spread out.
Exactly. That's a really key idea. We can use more regular interactions, ones that happen over a small region instead of a single point, both local and even non-local ones, and see if they approach the point interaction behavior.
And this involves convergence, making sure the approximations actually get closer in a meaningful way.
Precisely. The book talks about 2 main types, norm-resolvent convergence and strong-resolvent convergence. They're mathematical ways to measure how close the approximate models get to the true point interaction model.
Okay, norm-resolvent and strong-resolvent. What's the difference, roughly?
Norm-resolvent is stronger. It means the approximate solutions and the range of possible outcomes get very, very close to the point interaction ones. Strong resolvent is a bit looser. The average behavior converges, but maybe some finer details differ. Theorem 1.2.5 gives conditions for when we get that stronger norm resolvent convergence.
So we have ways to mathematically guarantee these spread out interactions really do mimic the point ones as they get narrower. What about energy levels? Eigenvalues and resonances.
Ah, yes. That's covered in Theorem 1.3.1. It looks at what happens to the energy levels, the eigenvalues of Hamiltonians with these short-range potentials. Let's call them A high.
Where is how spread out they are.
Exactly, is the range. As A high shrinks towards zero, some fascinating things happen. Negative eigenvalues, which correspond to bound states.
Like a particle trapped by the interaction.
Right. Those can actually dive down towards negative infinity. Equation 1.3.3 shows this. It signals a really strong binding effect emerging from the point interaction.
Wow, infinitely strong binding.
In the limit, yes. And then there are resonances. These are like temporary, unstable states.
Things that can form and then decay.
Exactly. Equation 1.3.63 describes how pairs of these resonances associated with H can shoot off to infinity in the complex energy plane as A high goes to zero. The whole energy landscape shifts dramatically.
Okay, interesting. Let's shift gears slightly. The book also covers stationary scattering theory. What's being scattered off these point interactions?
Well, think of firing quantum particles, like electrons or waves, at the point interaction. Scattering theory describes how their paths are deflected, how they bounce off.
And the scattering amplitude, what does that tell us?
That's the key quantity. It basically gives you the probability, or rather, the probability amplitude, for a particle to be scattered in a particular direction after hitting the point interaction.
Gotcha. The book mentions an on-shell scattering operator. What's on-shell? Sounds like physics jargon.
It is a bit jargony. On-shell just means we're considering the scattering process where the incoming and outgoing particles have the same energy, the energy they'd naturally have if they were just free particles.
Okay.
So the on-shell scattering operator, SCOXE20 by 820 by SB5, Y5, Y in equation 1.4.28,
mm-hmm.
It directly relates the incoming state to the outgoing state at that specific energy K. The scattering amplitude is derived directly from that operator.
And I saw something about analytic behavior of certain operators related to scattering, especially when the interaction strength is small. Why does analyticity matter?
Analyticity is really powerful in physics and math. It implies smoothness, predictability. If something is analytic, like the operator 1 plus B near 80, it means we can use tools like Taylor series.
Like expanding it out in powers of the strength.
Exactly. It lets us understand precisely how scattering changes as we just slightly tweak the interaction strength. Very useful for approximations and understanding limiting cases.
Makes sense. Okay, so we've covered approximations and scattering. Now let's dive into the specifics of a single point interaction in different dimensions, starting with our familiar 3D world.
Right. In three dimensions, a key object is the resolvent of the Hamiltonian. Equation 2.1.17 gives its form for a one-center point interaction. It tells you a lot about the system's energies and how it evolves.
And the domain, what the wave functions look like.
Yes. Equation 2.1.20 describes the domain. The wave functions essentially look like free particle solutions plus an extra bit that's very sharply peaked, singular, right at the interaction point.
And the book also mentions adding a Coulomb potential, like in an atom.
Yeah, the Coulomb plus point interaction model. It's interesting because it could potentially model, say, an atom where there's some very short-range anomaly or defect right at the nucleus affecting the electron.
Okay, that's a cool application. Now, what if we go down to just one dimension? How does a single delta interaction behave there?
Well, in 1D, as equation 3.1.15 shows, the wave function itself stays continuous across the delta interaction point.
But something must change.
Its slope. The derivative of the wave function takes a sudden jump, and the size of that jump is proportional to the value of the wave function right at that point. That jump is the signature of the interaction.
So a kink in the wave function.
A kink, exactly. And the book discusses approximating this delta using scaled potentials as per equations 3.2.25 and 3.2.26. As the scaling parameter goes to zero, you can recover the delta interaction.
Unless
the strength itself vanishes in a specific way as A goes to zero, in which case you just get a free particle, no interaction. Also, this specific approximation scheme doesn't quite capture what's called a Dirichlet boundary condition.
Which is like an infinitely strong wall.
Right, like cutting the line in two at that point. And don't forget, in 1D, we also have that Dirichlet possibility we mentioned earlier.
Right, the delta prime. It's fascinating how dimensionality changes things. What about two dimensions, briefly?
Two dimensions is notoriously tricky for point interactions. It needs its own specific renormalization procedure, different from 3D. The book mentions its low energy parameters in equation 5.36. Essentially, in TD, a point interaction mainly affects particles with zero angular momentum S waves and has zero effective range.
Okay, so single points covered. What if we have multiple point interactions, say a finite number N, in 3D.
Now things get interesting because they can influence each other. The Hamiltonian is denoted HY, where Y is the set of endpoints. We need certain conditions on the approximating potentials for it to be well-defined.
How do the energy levels behave now, especially near the energy levels of a single-point interaction?
Equations 1.3.1 and 1.3.2 show that as the range shrinks, the energy levels of the end-center system HY can shift and even split compared to the single center case Y. Mathematically, you can even get square root branch points in the energy expansions.
Square root. That sounds complicated.
It indicates a more intricate dependence on that range parameter. And finding the energy levels of the limiting system often involves a determinant condition. The debt starts to feel like the interactions are talking to each other.
Like ripples interfering on a pond, as you said. Okay, what about the extreme case? Infinitely many point interactions.
That sounds like a mess, but there's rigorous math for it, too. If the interaction centers Y form a discrete set in R, you can often define a limit Hamiltonian Y in the strong resolvent sense.
And how do you analyze that?
There's a resolvent formula, equation 1.1.6, involving an operator O. Okay. This operator basically encodes all the interactions between the infinitely many centers. It's quite complex, but solvable in some cases.
What kind of system would this model?
You could think of it as modeling, perhaps, a material with impurities scattered throughout or defects.
And building on that, the book mentions arranging these infinite points in a regular pattern, like a crystal lattice.
Exactly. Periodic point interactions. This is a foundational model for solids, for crystals.
How does that help understand solids?
Because of the periodicity, you can use powerful tools like Bloch's theorem and direct integral decomposition. These let you understand the band structure of the material, the allowed energy ranges for electrons.
Which determines if it's a metal or an insulator.
Or a semiconductor, precisely. It's a simplified model, but it captures the essence of band structure. The book also mentions simpler periodic cases like straight polymer chains. And these infinite systems can also be approximated by arrays of short-range potentials.
It's amazing how far you can push this simple point interaction idea. From one point to lattices modeling real materials. What about randomness? Random point interactions.
Right, that adds another layer. This lets us model disordered systems, amorphous materials, alloys, things with random impurities. The book looks mainly at 1D systems with random delta interactions.
That's the key question there.
A major focus is the nature of the energy spectrum. Is it continuous, allowing particles to move freely? Or is it a pure point spectrum, meaning all states are localized?
Localized, like trapped.
Exactly. Particles get trapped in finite regions due to the randomness. This is called exponential localization, where the wave functions decay exponentially fast. It's a hallmark of strong disorder. The Saxon and Huttner conjecture is also mentioned, trying to relate the disordered spectrum to ordered ones.
It sounds like statistical mechanics meeting quantum mechanics. Now, all this relies on some heavy-duty math, right? The book mentions a few key tools.
Absolutely. Crane's formula, for instance, is fundamental. It connects the resolvents of different self-adjoint extensions, which, as we saw, are crucial for defining these point interactions properly.
And non-standard analysis.
That's mentioned as a potentially more intuitive way to think about renormalization using infinitesimals. Maybe less rigorous for some, but conceptually helpful. Then there are Dirichlet forms, providing a variational approach, and the need for scales of Hilbert spaces to handle the singularities rigorously.
It's quite the mathematical toolkit. And these aren't just theoretical exercises, are they? They're extensions and applications.
For sure. The book touches on relativistic point interactions in 1D, which surprisingly connect to difference equations, and generalizations to different geometries, like interactions in waveguides or on quantum graphs.
Quantum graphs, like networks.
Yeah, modeling things like molecules or complex networks at the nanoscale.
Mm-hmm.
And potential applications pop up in areas like hadron spectroscopy, studying particles inside the nucleus, and even simplifying calculations in quantum chemistry.
It really is remarkable. This one simple concept, point interactions, branches out in so many directions. So wrapping up this deep dive, what's the big picture here?
I think the core message is that these incredibly simplified models, these point interactions, are actually surprisingly powerful and, crucially, often solvable. They give us real, tangible insights into complex quantum behavior.
And they're not just wild guesses. They capture fundamental physics, and we can systematically approach them using these more realistic, spread-out interaction approximations.
Exactly. There's a mathematical rigor underpinning it all. Plus, they have the certain, mathematical elegance. And the range of applications is just huge, from fundamental particle physics to materials science, even relativistic systems.
It really makes you think, how can the understanding we get from these idealized models, these almost toy problems, actually feed back into developing new technologies or maybe even help us probe the fundamental laws of nature more deeply? It's a fascinating question. For anyone wanting to explore more, that book, Solvable Models in Quantum Mechanics, is definitely the place to start. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.